Hello and welcome to another Dr. Jane's 10-Minute Positive Mental Health Podcasts. Today I'm going to be talking about something that quite a few people suffer from. I know I've suffered from this over the years, imposter syndrome. Now it's a term that's kind of been around more recently, but it's an actual condition, if you like, that's been around for, well, millennia. Imposter syndrome is, well, it's kind of what it says. It's when you feel that you're doing something and you feel a fraud at it. You feel that any moment now you're going to get that tap on the shoulder that says, actually, come on, buddy, we made a mistake. You shouldn't be having this life, that type of thing. I'm going to illustrate it with a gentleman I worked with a few years ago called Guy. He worked for his local authority, you know, his civic, his council authority, and he worked in IT in this. And he one of the things he used to say was that he'd kind of got the job because he'd just been there the longest, and he was getting surrounded by people that had had, further education. They'd had degrees, they'd had qualifications, and slowly but slowly, he used to think that actually he shouldn't be in this position. Something had gone wrong somewhere down the line, and he shouldn't be in the position that he was. He was kind of a senior position, and the people that were better qualified than him should be the ones. And this is what, you know, this is a typical example of imposter syndrome, but it comes from somewhere. Now, when we did a little bit of digging with Guy, what we found out was his dad had been in the military. He had quite exacting standards, you know, as often military people do. Things had to be done at certain times. People had to behave in certain ways. And this was just his home life. You know, what he was like actually at work was probably, you know, I don't know if he gave them a break or not. Who knows? But, you know, Guy would talk about him and his siblings. You know, everything just had to be so. His dad kind of treated home life like military. They were forever moving around. You know, they were based in Germany. They were based in Holland. They were based kind of, you know, quite a lot through Europe and, you know, in and out. And when they got to a certain age, the children used to go off to boarding schools. And again, he said that they were very regimented. So this was one of the things, but we're going to come back to his dad a little bit later. But let's just think about imposter syndrome. And so Guy used to say that he used to feel that he shouldn't be there. He felt a fraud. He felt a failure. There was no evidence at all. You know, he said that right from the beginning. There's absolutely no evidence to suggest that he was a failure. He'd never been kind of reprimanded. He'd never done anything wrong. But he just felt that he shouldn't be there because he found it difficult to accept his own achievements, his own successes, his own skills. He found that really difficult. He felt that everything should be conditional, and the conditional was that it all had to be perfect. And, you know, this used to tap into stuff that had gone on, you know, in his previous life. So what happened was he kind of thought that he has to be perfect. He used to have, you know, quite a few obsessional compulsive symptoms as well. He talked about at home where he'd come home. He was very aware of his upbringing. So when he got home, he was very conscious of the fact that he had two young children. He didn't want them to kind of, you know, experience what he'd experienced. But he said one of the things he always used to do when he got home was he would always tidy up his mug and his food cupboard. He always wanted things to be in certain ways, you know, cups to be facing certain ways. And, you know, his wife just kind of, you know, let him get on with it. She wasn't actually that fussed about it. It didn't cause too much hassle, but it was one of those things. It was almost like it became a release to him. But that was one of the things. So, and it's a perfectionism. His kind of obsessiveness was part of his perfectionism. And the thing was that if you try hard and you're never going to reach the point of success with when you're a perfectionist, you will fail. So then because you fail, you think that you have to try harder, and the harder you try, the more you fail, and the harder you try, and you just get into this vicious cycle. And what happened to Guy was that he was working himself so completely over the top that he ended up just kind of exhausting himself, and he went off with, I think he ended up being signed off with nervous exhaustion. Now, one of the things that we looked at with Guy was we looked at his kind of beliefs about himself. He had some very strong and rigid, you know, fundamental beliefs about himself. Things like, you know, when I got him to make a few statements, he would say, oh, I must be perfect. I must be productive. I must be able to cope. You know, all these I must and I should kind of statements, and anything that deviated from that, because he was only human, then that was perceived as a failure, and because that was perceived as a failure, then he felt a fraud, and then he felt that he shouldn't be doing the job that he did. So, you know, he had a great difficulty accepting his skills, as I say, his successes. This wasn't just in work. This was kind of in other bits of his life. His relationship with his wife was really quite solid and very supportive, actually. He felt that she knew the real him, so he didn't really have to kind of have a pretense. He could kind of be himself. And that was a really good relationship. But socially, he used to think that if people... say he used to like to play a few sports, golf and cricket and that type of thing. And he would try and arrange kind of a golf match, and he'd send a text to somebody. And if they didn't instantly come back to him, he'd feel that actually he'd failed in that. He'd got the wrong venue. He'd suggested the wrong day or wrong sport or the wrong people to play with. You know, he would come up with a great, you know, myriad of reasons why he felt that he was wrong and that he didn't quite belong. You know, there was this group of people that he'd known for a very long time. Again, no evidence that anybody had been nasty or vindictive or didn't like him in any way. But he felt that he didn't quite belong. Again, somebody was going to come along. He used to say that he felt that somebody was going to come along and almost take his place in the group. And he was almost kind of planning his exit out of this. So just to go back to his dad, just briefly, when we did a little bit of digging and he went and asked his mum about this, he and his dad as well. His dad was long since retired, and since he'd retired, he had, you know, the guy said he had mellowed quite a lot. So he was able to have different conversations with him. But one of the things that he found out was that... whilst he was in the army, it turned out that his dad had a nervous exhaustion, a nervous breakdown, which, because he found, you know, you've got to think it's a real kind of macho, go-getting kind of, environment. His dad had found that this is long before he'd got together with Guy's mum, and, you know, he was kind of like a career soldier right from the beginning. But right from the beginning, he'd found it difficult, and he'd ended up having this time out. He'd gone off to kind of like an army respite thing or anything. But the sense of shame that his dad, even when he reflected on it with Guy all those years later, he said you could still see it. You could still see it in his eyes, that sense of shame that he was carrying, because he was perceiving himself as being weak. He was perceiving himself as being a failure. He was perceiving himself as being no good. And because Guy's dad didn't want his children to be like that, but, you know, what he ended up doing was driving them all so hard and fast and rigidly that he ended up, Guy ended up sitting with me, and seemingly his siblings certainly weren't without their issues at all. So, you know, it's an interesting thing that, you know, when we look at people's backgrounds or we look at people's presentations, I always like, and I've said this before, I always like to have a little kind of route around the past, see where not only they have come from, but it can be so illuminating when we look at where their parents, and sometimes even go back to grandparents, you know, what their experiences were, how they were parented, how they have parented. It gives us a bit of a key to what's going on. So what we did with Guy, we used to look at kind of his work situation was, you know, kind of the thing that was the most current thing. So we'd look at the things that he had as skills and all the experience he had. And I got him to take a little audit. What I got him to do was I did a kind of a, you know, sort of like a time scale thing with him as well, you know, sort of like a, you know, a daily, a weekly type of things. And I got him to do, you know, the skills that he did, the things that he did, how well he did them, how well he, if you like to begin with, how well he felt he did them. And actually, when he went back and just reassessed it, actually how well he did it, you know, was there any negative feedback? Could he have done something better? Yeah, of course, there's going to be a few little things in here. But actually, it kind of built up his internal validation, because this is the thing about imposter syndrome. You can never internally accept what's going on. So you always you externalize it. And what happens is you kind of externalize it to the point of non-acceptance to yourself, and then you feel the imposter. So yeah, we got him to focus on the good things that were going on. I got him to build up a portfolio, you know, just in his mind, if you like, of all the stuff that was really good, that was positive, that was even neutral. You know, I often say if you have kind of positive at one end of the scale and negative at the other, there's a lot of stuff in between. There's a neutral space in between. So don't aim for necessarily perfect and, you know, absolute positive. But you can kind of shift away from the negative, and you can kind of be some, kind of like on that band somewhere, and be gradually working towards the thing that you want to. So recognizing it, there's another thing that he found very useful was when he felt that, oh, any moment I'm going to get a tap on my shoulder, something's going to, you know, they're going to tell me to pack all my stuff up and go because I shouldn't be here. He was able to actually say it to himself, you know, or think it to himself, or even write it down. So you just kind of write it down on a little post-it and then look at it, screw it up and chuck it in the bin. Recognize that what he was feeling was a state of, you know, a state of instant stress or anxiety, but it was imposter syndrome. It wasn't anything other than just that sense of, you know, him not being able to kind of internalize and accept his own achievements, his skills, his success. And the other thing that he also found useful was, and again, this was kind of in the work situation, but sort of like a little bit more so in this kind of socially situation, was not to compare himself to other people. So he found that when he stopped doing that, he didn't recognize that actually he was doing it consciously, but he was kind of unconsciously. So when he recognized that on the conscious level, that he was comparing himself to other people, the new people that might come into the group, and he felt that he had a deficit, when he actually stopped doing that, his kind of stress level, his arousal level dropped so much so quickly that he was actually able to start enjoying things. And people quickly noticed this. You know, people that used to play golf with you, they used to say, you know, not that they'd said anything bad before, but they used to say that they felt that he used to enjoy it more, which he found really useful. You know, it was a real kind of positive feedback. So if you feel that you do have, you know, that sense of I'm going to be tapped on the shoulder any moment now, just recognize it for what it is, which is an imposter syndrome. And this is often drawn out of perfection. So you can kind of just, you know, conceptualize it. Stop comparing yourself to people and focus on the good things that you can do and build up your portfolio. Because when you have times of, stress, you know, heavy workload, you know, moving, whatever it is, then you have got your portfolio to dig into and actually say, well, actually, when I felt stressed at such and such a point, I was able to carry on because I was able to kind of just kind of, you know, calm it down a little bit. So just have a think about it. If this is you, just have a think about it and think about the skills that you can do. And remember, my top tip for everything is when you feel those moments, remember to just kind of breathe, just kind of reoxygenate your blood, because, you know, it's an anxiety state as well. I've been Dr. Jane. I hope you found this podcast useful, and I will speak to you again very soon.